Hey, guys, everyone take a seat, please. Come. Okay, guys, we have to start quickly because I have to leave soon. Where is it? Okay, thank you, Adif. Okay, I have to leave at 6:45. I apologize. I'm heading to CM Ashas in Yerushalayim, so get there really quickly. Okay, so first of all, welcome to the Caravanis from Antwerp. Welcome to the yeshiva. Hope you've enjoyed your day. Come visit us again. What is this all, the celebration of the Daf Yomi? What are some ideas to think about? Just again, to give you a little bit of a timeline. Tomorrow we're having, I think probably the most popular Daf Yomi deliverer in the entire world. He's a former Hesder Yeshiva student of the Gush. His name is Uri Brilliant. I think 7,000 people listen to his, or access to Daf Yomi. I don't know what the numbers are, but maybe some of you can go on tonight and Google and find someone more than something like 7,000 who's spread in the newspaper. So I'll have him speak tomorrow. Just Ben Echutzar is in English, and he's an English-speaking Israeli, so he's going to be speaking at 12 o'clock. And then Emirtz Hashem, and we're going to have, you saw the festivities, there's a Sudas Mitzvah with dancing, and where did this start? How did this happen? What does this mean? How do we process it? And I'm going tonight to a very, very exciting event. Some of you may be live casting. So where does this come from? So in 1923, Rav Meir Shapiro presented the idea. He was one of the leading Hasidic rabbis of Central Europe. He was very well known for the Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin. In fact, I heard today that there is an event in the Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin in Lublin. It's actually a Daf Yomi event. Someone's there celebrating. Not a big event, but there is an event. And he suggested this to the, I think it was one of the first Agudah conventions, which ironically happened to be in Vienna, which is also a city known for other conventions and other Jewish startups. And part of his vision was the following. Let's take a few steps back to better appreciate his vision. The Gemara says, source number, the first source, I didn't get a chance to number them. Amar Funa, Rabbi Huda, Li'olam, Yashlamandam, Parsha Yosef, V'matzibur. You don't just read a specific Parsha each week, but every Jew in the world this week is reviewing Parshas Vayigash. Every Jew in the world this week is reading the Chumash, is reading Rashi, is reading Targum. And this is known, of course, as the mitzvah of Shtayim Mikra V'echa Targum, which means there's a built-in common curricula. That even though one yeshiva is learning Baba Basra, and one yeshiva is learning Gittin, and one yeshiva is learning Machshava, and one yeshiva is learning Halacha, there's a built-in Torah Shebichsav common curriculum that unites all Jews, wherever they are, wherever they may be. And you can get on a plane, you get on a train, and all of a sudden you see a Jew studying Torah. He's got to have something to say about for Yigash. He's got to be thinking about Yehuda and Yosef and Goshen and Yaakov. And for those who are not yet there, this is certainly, certainly a good baby step to take. If you're not yet reviewing Shtayim Mikra V'Echa Targum, that would be a really good first step to take. I would recommend a good couple of parshas to begin with. Just read it once and listen carefully to the Baal Kriya. That can count as your second time. And if you find Onkelos a little bit too dry because you're not there yet, then just try to read through the Rashis. It's really it's probably one of the cornerstones of life after yeshiva. If you're asking me, how can I best prepare for life outside of yeshiva? So obviously we don't learn the exact type of learning you're going to learn outside of yeshiva, but more or less, the baseline for people who learn successfully outside of yeshiva, the baseline is Shtayim Mikra V'Echa Targum, and a lot of people do Daf Yomi. It's like the baseline, okay, I don't have time for 2-3 hours starring for Ian, but I get my Shtayim Mikra V'Echa Targum, and I get my Daf Yomi, and you see people on trains and planes with their special apps for Daf Yomi and Shtayim Mikra. So there is a built-in common curriculum. And in general, Chazal felt that Torah just can't be learned aimlessly, but the Gemara says, source, second source, I'm Rav Safra, Mishun of Yeshua. You guys get source sheets? Anyone pass care about your source sheets? I'm Rav Safra, Mishun of Yaakov Rechanana. Ma'idich said, v'shinantam levonacha. When the Torah talks about Talmud Torah, it uses a strange lashon, v'shinantam, which sounds mathematical. You guys get? Alexander, you have a source sheet? You have a source sheet?
Yeah.
Great. So I'll take v'shinantam ela v'shilashtem. That word v'shinantam can be morphed into v'shilashtem. Li'olam yeshalish adam shenosav. Shlish b'mikra. Shlish b'mishnah, shlish b'gemar. So this isn't a common curriculum, but Chazal aren't just telling us to learn aimlessly. Chazal are recommending why we're not mekayim this today, a third of Mikra, a third of Mishnah, a third of Talmud. There are various answers to the Rishon. So on the one hand, Chazal wanted to create curriculums, and in the case of Shtayim Mikra V'Echa Targum, there's a built-in curriculum of Torah Shebichsav. On the other hand, the Gemara says in Avodah Zarah, very famous Gemara in Avodah Zarah, based on the first Pesukim in Tehillim, Ashrei ha'isha shelo alach batzas rishayim uvederech hata'im lo amad, v'moshe leitzim lo yashav. What's the next Pasuk? Ki'im b'taras Hashem cheftzo. Who can end the Pasuk? Ki'im b'taras Hashem cheftzo. Uvisaraso. Yehageh yolam v'layim. It's the second Pasuk in Tehillim. Even though it's Taras Hashem, you also have to make it your Tar. You're looking for your chelik in Tar. And what part of Tar do you love? And what part of Tar are you excited by? The Gemara says in Avodah Zarah, third source, very, very interesting story. Amarav, Ein Adam Lo Me Tara, Ela Mimakom Shelibo Chafetz. You have to find your part of Tara, your own passion, which you are excited because passion will lead you to performance and to persistence and to engagement. Because it says Taras Hashem Chetzo, but you have to make it Taras O. And in fact, the Gemara tells an interesting story. Levi and Reb Shimon were learning with Levi's father, with Rebbe Shimon's father. Who is Reb Shimon's father? Anyone know? Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi. They were learning together, the Gemara says. And they finished a certain sefer. So what should they bring now? What should they learn now? So Levi raised his hand and said, Mishlei. Reb Shimon raised his hand and said, Tehillim. Who do you think Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi listened to? His son. He said, let's learn Tehillim. Levi was upset. So what do you think the second pasuk in Tehillim was? Yehuda HaNasi chose to learn. Taras Hashem Chetzo. You have to learn your own Torah, the Torah that you're excited by. So Kimatu Hacha, line number two from the bottom, when they got to the pasuk in Taras Hashem Chetzo, Perish Rebbe V'amar, Ein Adam Lamei Tara, Elo Yimakam Shalibo Chafetz. He read this drasha. Taras Hashem Chetzo, V'sarasa Yega Yemavala, this will be your Torah. So Levi said, I can get up now, I can leave. Because you're not learning my Torah. I wanted to learn Mishlei. You're learning Tehillim. Of course, Levi didn't leave. He was just joking with Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi. He said, you're not learning my Torah. I wanted to find out. So there's a very delicate balance in Torah between every person learning their own Torah and their own style and their own approach and their own passion. But yet the desire to get everyone literally on the same page and get everyone learning one thing, which is built in for Torah Shebichsav, but Torah Shebalpat, everyone's always finding their own nooks and crannies in this endless sea. So now it's 1923, and this great Hasidic leader, great visionary. Remember, the Yeshiva Chacham Lublin was the first yeshiva with real dormitories and real food and real beauty. Before, and if you wanted to learn Torah, you had to go to a town and find your own bed to sleep on in some widow's home or widower's home that you paid some money to, and you ate your bean soup and your hard bread. Really, really Spartan conditions. And now Rabbi Meir Shapiro says, now we have enough communal wealth, let's raise some money. Let's build this beautiful, gorgeous grounds. Show of hands, who's been at the Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin? Beautiful, right? Big Roman columns and this huge floor, very similar to here, by the way. When I go to the Yeshiva, I think about this is part of that legacy. That now we're living through Messianic times, Nimos and Mashiach, and we shouldn't be building small little hovels and small little trailers. We should be building palaces to Tara, to celebrate Tara. So now, one of his ideas, one of his visions is a palace of Tara, a Yeshiva that's beautiful. A testament and an homage to the beauty of Torah. Another idea of his is let's try to create one common curriculum, not just for Torah Shebichsav, Parshas Vayikra, Parshas Vayechi, Parshas Shmos, but one common curriculum for Torah Shebaalpeh. Now, part of what catches his eye is that it's 1923. Now, you may not know it because that literally is 97 years ago, but 1993 is about after 60 years of great advancements in many fields, the real revolution, but in one field in particular, transportation. People are starting to travel, first sheet please, people are starting to travel like they've never traveled before. Steam engines, large ships, Titanic, luxury liners, across the ocean. And in his presentation to the Agudah of 1923 says, could you imagine a Jew that gets on a boat in Israel and arrives in New York only 12 days later? Who would have thought you can get from Israel to New York in 12 days? And then walks into a base medrash in New York City and they're learning the same thing he learned 12 days earlier and continue learning on the boat. What an incredible image to have. Because in 1850, Dafyomi wasn't conceivable because Jews weren't meeting each other. You lived in Poland, you rarely saw Jews from England. You lived in America, you never, Jews who lived in America, you never saw. It took months to sail by ship across the ocean. Now people on the move. And now it's about 90 years later, and we travel by jet engine, but to a degree, 2020 is more similar to 1923 than 1923 is similar to 1863. The shift between 1863 and 1923 is more dramatic in terms of transportation, conceptually, than the shift between 19, even though the days are shorter, because people didn't mind the 10 days travel, but it wasn't 3 months. It was 10 days. And people started to do it. People started to make those trips. So part of what makes Daf Yomi so appealing is you literally create communities of Jews united by Torah across the spectrum. I'm going to do a very Haredi-oriented celebration that I want to get tickets for. But it doesn't make a difference. This type of Jew, that type of Jew, we're here from this year, from that year. And you can learn anywhere in the world, and you're literally a common language. That's what makes us unique. That's what makes us so powerfully bound. We have a common language through kashrus. We can't just eat what we want. We're common language through Shabbos, wherever you are. Well, sometimes when I land, there I'm traveling now, I chuckle to myself as the plane's about to land. And I think about all the other businessmen and businesswomen on the flight, they're going to go to the quiet hotels, the sleepy little bars, and quiet little restaurants. In any city, I'm going to land that I have a built-in network with people. If it's Shabbos, I'm going to have a Shabbos. I have to take people into your house for Shabbos. It's kosher. It's wherever I go. Wherever a person, wherever a Jew goes, there's a built-in family of people. That's what makes life solid. It's what makes life successful. Not businesses and money, just family and peoplehood and community and knowing that you're part of something. And this just accentuates that feeling because you literally can engage. I love meeting these like little yeshiva bachim on the flights, and whenever they're up, I don't want to bother them. Like, we're sitting in the room of Fahar, what are you learning in the mirror? What are you learning in? So I'm like, tell me what Tosu says. And like, a little quick Fahar, just see if he's up on the ball, and then he can go to sleep. And this is probably one of the greatest accomplishments of Hasidus. Don't forget that Hasidus started Daf Yomi. We don't realize it because it's mushroom beyond Hasidus, but the origin of this entire process is in the world of Hasidus. The Ger Rebbe announced in Rosh Hashanah 1923 that he's joining the Daf Yomi. Who knows how it would have evolved if the Ger Rebbe hadn't validated it and lent it its heft and validity. And Chassidus talks about collecting Jews and collecting Jews from different walks of life. And it's a perfect Chassidish manifestation because it's really a learning that's geared towards people that aren't in yeshiva. In the yeshiva world in general, it's not very popular to learn Daf Yomi because you have more time available on your hands and you'd rather go more in-depth. So by the way, we are starting a very popular Daf Yomi in English. You know about our Daf Yomi in Hebrew, but we're starting with one of the Shir Dala guys. He's a legend, so I'm sure you can find out some of the other guys. Tani Badnash is going to be giving a really, I mean, just to meet this guy. He's returning from the army, I think, tomorrow. The next day he's going to start, I think, Sunday, whatever. So it's worthwhile, I think, during the lunch breaks. But just to sit in his presence and see a Shir Dala guy who, you know, basically been through Shas a couple times. And it's pretty cool that he's holding on to. He knows much of the information. So Daf Yomi is important, and I would recommend it, especially for people that are only going to stay a year or two in yeshiva and immediately be thrown into a non-Torah environment. We have to build your own Torah menu and build your own frameworks. This is a nice continuation. If you're planning on staying longer in yeshiva, not just in this yeshiva, but going to yeshiva afterwards, then you may have a little bit more luxury to hold off on Daf Yomi and to spend your time more in Nian and more in Lidus and more in Kiyas. But it's really fascinating to see this process that creates a collective. I'm talking too much, but I'm going to try to get through some of the sources. But if you take a look at, let's say source number four, the fourth source, Har Sinai is defined by the presence of a Kahal. That's probably the most famous nickname for Har Sinai. Har Sinai is the proper name. One of the famous nicknames is, Vayitein Hashem Elai, it's quoting one of three or four psukim in Devarim, Eshnei Luchos Avanim Kesivim Be'etzpeh Elokim, How does Moshe refer to Har Sinai, the day of Matan Torah?
Yeah.
Oh my God. And Al Pi Kabbalah, they already said there are actually 600,000 letters in Torah. There aren't, but mathematically there's far fewer. But there's 600,000 letters, whatever letters mean in Kabbalah, corresponding to the 600,000 Jews who were present. I think there's a Marsha somewhere, someone once showed me. There are actually 600,000 different versions of Torah that stream through, 600,000 different. And for centuries, we were so dispersed and we were so scattered, and we're still dispersed and we're still scattered, but changes in transportation, and the second jet fuel that has really changed and promoted Daf Yomi is not just the changes in transportation, but the changes in communication. Daf Yomi wouldn't be what it is today without the internet. And so many people access Daf Yomi information and material. It's created not just virtual communities of people, but virtual Rebbe Talmud relationships. I mean, I get a lot of people coming over to me on the street. Oh, I heard your shiurim. I've never met you, but you're like a Rebbe to me. Or I like your ideas. But I can only imagine people who teach Daf Yomi, hundreds, thousands of people. What it must mean to have hundreds or thousands of Talmidim out there you've never met, and they've never met you, you probably won't ever meet. But the changes and the advances, which is an important lesson beyond this context of this year. Technology, guys, is not dangerous. Technology is opportunity with danger. You have to decide how to calibrate it, how to type rate it, because without changes in transportation, without changes in communication, the Daf Yomi isn't as explosive as it is today. And Hashem gives us these faculties. We can decide not to use them because the risk outweighs the reward. That's the legitimate. If you were to say, I don't want to use a cell phone, even though I know I can access this, that, or the other because of the perils, that's a fair, it's an honest and candid position. But these, and we don't want to wait it out. Some people say, I want to wait it out. I think a lot of educated Haredim will say, we're not hiding, we're just waiting it out. We're just waiting out the wave. We're not going to be early adapters. We're going to wait until other people have tried it, tested it, found out what the pitfalls are. There's a lot to be said about that. Just there's a lot to be said about early adaptation, because when you get ahead of the curve and you get to use it and understand the technology. But it's a good moment to see how Kara is adhere to technologies of the day. It's been a very nice alliance between the reason for Daf Yomi over the last 80 years and the advance of Daf Yomi, in part translation, I think, the fact that there's so much translated into English and art scroll has really advanced Daf Yomi, certainly in English-speaking areas. That's not a new technology, that's just getting resources together to bring Torah into different languages. So part of it is realizing how Torah has been buffeted by changes in our people, how Daf Yomi has created communities of people that are linked across the globe because they're just learning HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah Shebaal Peh. I think part of it is also, part of the excitement is what I would call the Daf Yomi spin-offs and how that's changed. Because the world of Daf Yomi today doesn't just include Daf Yomi. It includes Tanakh Yomi, Rambam Yomi, Navi Yomi, Nach Yomi, Emunah Yomis. Does anyone ever know what the Sefer, ever seen the Sefer Dvar Malchus? You know what the Dvar Malchus is? You know what the Sefer is? You've seen in those like little white, grayish paper pamphlets. Mm-hmm. You know what they are? It's basically a portion of Torah, Nevi'im, Ksuvim, Mishnah, Gemara, but all within the Chabad. This is put out by Chabad. And all the Rebbe's Torah per day, or per week. I think it's per week, if I'm not mistaken. What?
Like
what?
Chayinu, or is that?
I don't know if they know.
It's also
a Chabad. Okay, this is the original. Dvar Malchus. This is the original. Look it up, Google it tonight. And that's also a spinoff. In fact, the irony is, even the opposition to Daf Yomi is itself a Daf Yomi spinoff. In the yeshiva world, about 20 years ago, maybe a little more, and a protest movement began. I wasn't protesting Daf Yomi, Chas V'Shalom, but Daf Yomi doesn't fit the yeshiva cycle. So what do they create in yeshiva? It's very popular in yeshiva. It's called Amud Yomi. We're going to study one Amud per day, but that will we'll spend 5-6 hours, and that will allow us to read all the Rashis, and read the Tosfos, and read the Rishonim, and really understand the Lumbas rather than flying through Daf Yomi. But even that is essentially, I don't think that would have evolved if not for Daf Yomi. Even the moon, we're our guest, Daf Yomi. Even you're Daf Yomi inspired. Because Daf Yomi has created a different attitude to Talmud Torah. And that's the second point I want to talk about today. Not just communities and collectivism and grouping Jews together through Torah Shebaal Peh, but it's created a sense of learning, not just out of interest, leisure. Like, when do you read a book? When do you read a newspaper article? When do you watch the game? When you have time, interest, and resources. You're not sick, you're healthy, you have time, and you're interested, you'll watch this game. And to a degree, as I mentioned before, Torah has to be fueled by interest and time. But not Daf Yomi. Speak to Daf Yomi veterans. And Daf Yomi, the train's running. And the thing is, whether you're sick, or whether it's snowing outside, whether it's freezing cold, whether it's your bar mitzvah, or your son's bar mitzvah, or Yom Kippur, or Tisha B'Av. Is there Daf Yomi or Tisha B'Av? I haven't been here. There is Daf Yomi or Tisha B'Av. Pages are turning. And if you miss a day, you're 2 behind. And if you miss 2 days, you're 3 behind. And then at a certain point, you no longer cover the mountain. And it creates the sense of Yomi, that I'm chayv to learn Kara, and that In this room, we once asked Rabbi Lichtenstein, Rabbi, why should you learn Torah? And he's about to continue. Like, what's the reason for learning Torah? Rabbi Lichtenstein cut him off abruptly, and he was just aghast. He said, why learn Torah? Why breathe? That's the end of the conversation. Are we able to incorporate Talmud Torah, not just as a fundamental chiyuv, but there's something missing from my day if I haven't contacted with it, even if you're not a Daf Yomi performer. There are days you don't get to learn that much. But when you put your head to the pillow at night, you at least crack open a Mishnah and just even read a Mishnah. Not even understand the Mishnah or in depth of the Mishnah, but just say, for example, the times I don't eat, and it's just it's 11 o'clock at night, I don't want to eat too much. I haven't eaten all day, but I know I have to eat something, so I'll have a yogurt or just something light, because I don't have to put some food into my body before I go to sleep. You know the same attitude towards Talmud Torah? That it's my lifeline through Bona Shalom. And some days I learn more, some days I learn less, but on a day that I've been severed entirely from my Kodesh Baruch Hu, let's open up a safe and read some Kodesh Rashi, I'll open up a Mishnah, I'll open up a something, and just chant Pesukim, and just reconnect to Kodesh Baruch Hu. And that's what Daf Yomi has created. We don't just learn, even if you're not a Daf Yomi participant. Try to be someone that doesn't just learn when you can, when you're healthy. Okay, you're not healthy, instead you shrink your time of learning, you sleep a little more, you recover, you have a midterm, you have a... Boys ask me all the time in college, should I go to the Beis Medrash? Boys were in YU in similar situations. I said, of course you have to shave down your time when you're studying for midterms and finals and tests, but don't walk away from the Beis Medrash. Just come for 15 minutes. Just come for 10 minutes. Walk in for a few seconds. And Daf Yomi has created what I call the All Hatara. Part of being an Oved Hashem is being able to carry yokes, burdens, responsibility. We once asked Rabbi Lichtenstein to define from a kind for us, he had a beautiful phrase. Shoulders strong enough to bear the weight of religion without being crushed by it. Religion's a weight. Religion's heavy. Do, don't, when, responsibility. And when you're young, burdens and responsibilities are frightening. And in a world of freedom, you're looking to let loose and disengage from responsibilities. But as you realize in life, responsibilities create connections and affiliations to something beyond yourself. So you can live free, and then you wake up one day and you're free of anything and you're connected to nothing. So burdens and responsibilities and duties, they're your ticket of admission to relationships and affiliation with people. You want to be a husband? That means responsibility. You want to be a father? It's responsibility. You want to be a healthy co-worker and have a healthy work environment? That means burdening responsibility. So responsibility seems frightening, but it's a portal to depth and meaning and relationships, which are far more important than accomplishments and freedom. So they're tickets of entry. So the ultimate association is to feel like Kodesh Baruch Hu. Well, how do you feel like Kodesh Baruch Hu? Some money, burden, duty, responsibility. It can't stifle you, it can't suffocate you, but you have to have shoulders and say, what am I chayiv to do? What are your chayiv for tonight? You're 18 years old, most of you, you're sitting in yeshiva. I'm chayiv to say Kriya Shema. Marav is Rishos, but we've opted into Marav already. When you're eating a bench, now in this context of your life, you're chayiv to go to Night Seder, and that's your curriculum now. Kriya Shema Alamita. Hopefully your midos will improve. Hopefully you'll be mekayim in another machaveros. You live with chiyuv, and you don't feel crushed by it, and you don't try to script a life that's absent of any responsibility. So there's an all mitzvahs, Kabbalah's Ol Malchus Shemayim. Talk about 83 yokes. Kabbalah's Ol Malchus Shemayim to have a Kodesh Baruch Hu present in the room and not just to act as his wife. That's one burden. Now Hashem's constantly there. In other words, Kabbalah's Ol Mitzvahs. We talk about Ol Mitzvahs. But the Gemara says in Avodah Zarah, in the middle of the page, Avodah Zarah, in the base, kind of the early O, we own Yasim Adam Asim Al Tavartara Kishor La'ol U'Kikamor La'masa. It's a little bit next week's Parsha. In the next week's Parsha, Yaakov describes Yisachar as a big bone donkey. Yisachar, the prophet before, Hamor Garim, Rogay Shem Mishasayim. He's a big bone, Hamor Garim, Rogay Shem Mishasayim. So based on that description, the Gemara says in Avodah Zarah, we should be able to carry the all of Torah like an ox, and the weight of Torah like a donkey. I don't have the time, maybe next week I'll distinguish between donkeys and oxen. What does it mean to have weight? What does it mean to have all? But right now, just assume they're the same. Can you carry the yoke of Torah in your life, the responsibility to learn Torah? I went to, my upbringing is Haredi. I went to a Haredi high school. And there's a lot of that world that I didn't find fit who I was. And that's why I changed a little bit.
But one thing in that world I found very healthy, and I wonder if you have it. I feel like Captain Hook. Always living out of that's the right character in Peter Pan. There's always a TikTok in my system. Because the concept of Bithel Tara was hammered into me. And every second had to be accounted for. And I remember in 10th grade asking my Rebbe, can I see a movie? And he said, well, it's Bithel Tara. He said, well, I'll make it up. I'll learn tonight. He said, well, he says he'll learn tonight also. And I couldn't live with that weight of having to constantly learn, but I'm forever grateful that I have that sense that I've learned to balance it and moderate it, but I try not to have time, and I don't have much time available, but I feel at some very deep level of my consciousness, I'm high to learn Torah. It's my chiyuv, the Kachanet Sarta. The Rambam writes, source number 4 or 5 from the bottom of the first page, Kolish Nisal, Chayiv Betal Mekara, Bein Ani, Bein Ashir. You could be rich, you could be poor, you could be healthy, you could be flawed, you could be suffering, you could be young, you could be old. You could be a female on him as far as Minnesota, even an ani who has to take handouts. Remember my Rebbe once read this Rambam to me. He said, you could be old, you could be sick, you could be frail, you could be healthy, you could be young, you could be... And who's the person you think is least high of the Torah? And even he's high at the top of the heap, and even look at the last second of the last line. A female about Isha, but even if you're married, your family, even you have to learn Torah. You'd be surprised how much marriage gets in the way of Torah. Marriage, healthy marriage, parenting, husbanding, spending time with the family, even about Isha, but I think Daf Yomi has created that vista for people. That Torah is not just something we dip in when we feel comfortable with and when we're interested in. And it's a real challenge. It's a good midterm challenge here. I think it's very important. I'll step out of the shir for a second. I was thinking to several boys in the week. It's absolutely crucial. Absolutely crucial for every one of you. Sometime this week or next week to conduct a midterm report card. Because you're not in high school, I'm not going to give you a report card. And what makes it so vital is the metrics are really hard and personal because really, really, really the metrics are not how well you understand shir. It's really unimportant. On both ends. When we look at you, I honestly promise you, we're not looking at how well you say Svar and Shia and how well you answer every Friedman's questions. Our eyes are trained to how you're developing as an Omen Hashem, and each person that can be different. Now, the problem is in high school, you're used to using intellectual metrics as yardsticks. And the experience feels the same because we're learning a lot of Gemara and Tanakh. But ultimately, it's the translation, and it trickle down. Is it changing my davening? Is it changing my midos? Is it changing my brethren of Hashem? Is it changing my behavior? Because time's really dwindling. It sounds crazy, but look how fast it all disappeared. And I promise you, it's going to go... One thing I can promise you, it's going to go much quicker from now till apartment, at least from now, from the beginning to the high time. If you don't trust me, just think of your ways, how quickly they start to move. It's really important to take an honest look at yourself and say, am I translating and is it trickling down to who I am? Or am I just reading through books and reading through ideas and reading through Rishon and dancing the dance and walking down? I promise you that sticks maybe 3 weeks. Really, I promise you. And 3 weeks after you get home, very little luck. Translators really internalize and it sinks into their bloodstream. And I'm a changed person. I see things different. I talk different. I can't generalize. That's what makes yeshiva so rewarding, but ultimately so challenging. Because we're not saying dress this way, be this way. We're asking you to change as a person, become a healthier with Hashem, and let Torah be your stream that affects that. Very briefly, the third aspect I wanted to speak about, Nafiyami. First aspect, creating groups of people across the world, common curriculum. Second aspect, creating a yomi sense. The Torah is not something we just dip in when we want, dip out when we don't want. The third aspect I think Daf Yomi has created, and this is something very close to my heart. Before you started this year, you pretty much had, most of you had a fairly negative and suspicious notion of Gemara. What are these rabbis talking about? Shirts and eggs and oxen and goring? Why would the greatest minds in history... Maybe they aren't the greatest minds in history, but why would they spend their time wasting their time over inane picking details? And one thing I can tell you, anyone that's been paying attention for the last 4 months knows, they're not picking your details. They're hieroglyphs to the will of Hashem. And if you just spend enough time in your life, you could decode God's will. Again, maybe 2,000 lifetimes. What can I learn about Hashem's will based on this Tosfos? What can I learn about the nature of Cheskos Gimel Shem, the nature of Bibles, the nature of Kenyan, the nature of Dayanim, the nature of neighbors, the nature of eye contact, etc. There's always translating details into larger concepts. And if anything, you're the idiot, not them, because they knew it so well, they just could snap their fingers and give details, and everyone in the room knew what those details referred to. When Baba and Rav Nachman, Rabbi Rav Nachman, talked about Shchunah Gavai, everyone in the room knew they weren't talking about Shchunah Gavai, they were talking about how to understand Cheskos Gimel Shana, are you the Mokhsa, are you not the Mokhsa? How do you understand Bilas and Karka? How? We're the idiots. We have to take 30 hours just to decode what they were saying. And if I said sports teams to you, in a second your mind would start thinking and imagining all the games you've watched because that's what's in your blood. So I just say Patriots, and all of a sudden, the one here is in Boston, you're reviewing the Super Bowls and the games and the plays because it's just immediate. That's how well they knew Shabbos. So you did it. You know that now. But for so many people, the world of Gemara seems foreign and foreboding, and who knows what's there. And Daf Yomi has changed the game. And Daf Yomi has brought an entire world back into the world of Torah Shabbat. People don't have the ability to fully understand the way we're trying to get you to understand this year. None of the time and the resources. And I think it specifically makes sense that there is something larger than myself. And I am through the ocean of Talmud. And there is something other. I think what makes Tanakh so wildly successful is that it is so easy to make beach. To land on the beach of a Paraclete is pretty easy, or a Paraclete Yermia, you read it. Now Rabbi Lita can give you analysis, parallels, word associations, deeper levels. You know, it's deeper in Tanakh, but 5-10 minutes into learning Tanakh, you're there. How long does it take you to crack open a sugya? Hours. Just to get to some level of comprehension. You can either be flustered by that, or you can realize this is the will of Hashem, and that's why I'm losing this wrestling match. You'd be cowardly. I don't want any hard work. I just want easy stuff. Huh? You say, if I really want to dance with a Kaddish Baruch Hu, I have to get in the ring. I have to put forth humongous, gargantuan effort and time and commitment and really work it and really... When's the last time before this year, you really sat for 10, 15 minutes and thought about an idea for 15 minutes straight. And you're always being hustled from station to station. Now you realize to really get puzzles, you're going to just sit there and think, okay, maybe you're hallucinating at this stage. Just better the thing than interacting with you. You say, he says, he says, he says, whittle it down. But at some point, that's not going to be. Something that a lot of people say, should I listen to music when I'm in the Beis Medrash? That's an interesting question about Beis Medrash decorum. But it's a more important question, even if it matters, about your developmental focus. I promise you, when you're listening to music, your resources are confused. That may be important to you because it calms you and may need that calming, but you also need mental focus. And the ability to focus on one idea and quiet. And just go to a quiet place in your mind and really striate an idea and develop it and cut into it. I promise you that will be a skill you'll thank you for. So take a little bit of time every day. When you're not learning the Harusa and you're not learning music, just to sit and think quietly. I promise you this will be a skill for life. To think of an idea in a sustained fashion without music, because inevitably the music is getting into your son. I don't say you shouldn't listen to music when you're working, but at some point you have to be able to shrink all your resources and just laser beam them into an idea without scattering your resources. And I think the Talmud, Bavli, Daphne, Yomi, is a very, it's exciting for me. It's, if you ask me, what is my dream in life? My dream in life is that more people should fall in love with Shas in a world in which I think that romance is suffering. And suffering for a lot of reasons, and I think the consequences of that are very dire. Because at stake is, once you don't understand the world of Chazal, and why Chazal said things, and why the Tekunas are so important, and why we don't make capricious changes, and all of a sudden, rabbinic authority starts to erode, and Masara starts to erode. It all starts with Chazal. They were great people. They lived over 600-year periods unlike any intellectual outburst in the history of the annals of mankind. These are 485. These are incredible people. They established a Masara, and that Masara helped us survive Golos, and that Masara we're dedicated to. And now, thank God, we've discovered and reinvented Tanakh. We're getting back in the world. We're going to be an expert in Tanakh. That's also fine, but the building, not necessarily to become a Talmud Chacham, but at least to walk out of this building knowing your way through Shas and understanding who these people were. You have the luxury of having 2 years in this building. Most people wanted comparable buildings. Most people did not, and Daf Yomi is a ticket back in. And all of a sudden they feel like, may not know it in depth, but I'm skating over the edge of a glacier. Get that image? You can either skate on an icing rink or you can skate on a glacier. Your feet are in contact with the same surface area of ice. But when you're skating on a glacier, you know you're skating on something the size of a continent. So you may be reading one page of text, but you know there's such depth there. And you know there's such ideas, and that's why these intermediate Daf Yomi should give a little bit of in-depth analysis, not too much, but they're so fantastic, they're so amazing. Because they give you a spoon fed, a couple of interesting ideas about the Talmud. So cast your vision for some of you 5-6 months from now, for some of you hopefully a year and a half from now, for some of you later. For most of you, not all of you, but for most of you, I can't imagine a successful, sustained learning program that doesn't include that. If you still want to be involved in Darsha, I'm going to think you should. I think it's a travesty now. Even if you're a world expert in Darsha itself, you still have to be involved in Darsha Baba. This is really your chance. So even if you don't start to go to Daf Yomi this year, think about how it's revolutionized the Jewish world. And then one day, 5, 6, 7 years, when you get back to it, and then it's clear that this becomes your anchor point for the world of Darsha, the Darsha Baba. Maybe it'll be 7 years from now, you can rejoin at that point. But just think about it. How many Daf Yomi cycles will you finish in your life? Unfortunately, I don't have the time. I'd love to. Just make it to that. I think we're grounded in it. I'm involved in everything. But if you're not staying in Yeshiva, you're not learning in Kola, this is certainly something. First of all, to be excited about today. Again, we've had certain programs the last couple of days, and the attendance isn't exactly full. It's all for you. Every program you attend, you've got a lot of great experiences. And program you don't attend, you just miss. You just deprive yourself of those experiences. So tomorrow, 12 o'clock, what will you do? You listen to this person hearing this. It's not going to get enough Yomi Shiva. Tell a story, how we went from 0 to 7,000. How do you get to this place? How did a boy who was sitting in this room all of a sudden touch 7? I think that's the number. We'll tell you tomorrow. Then there's a big lunch tomorrow. If you want to check out, just go to the bookstore. Or if these things are important, then expose yourself to them and see how they affect you. Okay? I gotta run because I'm 45 minutes late tonight. Okay. So I'll see you there at the show tomorrow.